And now for something completely different.
Okay, there we go. Like I was trying to say before, one has to switch things back and forth here. So, okay. So, welcome to the Tinker Shop. And you can hear me messing around here off and on, trying to get everything all working properly. So, we should be good. Okay, like I said, welcome to the Tinker's Bench. This is Tinker, also known as Wes. I'll blow my OPSEC here. And like I've said, you know, I'm not quite sure where we'll all go with this, or you know, what all points we'll hit, because blacksmithing is something that's usually pretty much hands-on. And so, basically what we'll be able to cover is just the things that, how to best describe it. How to do it without, touching it. So, okay, there. Now, hopefully I'm still coming through. I literally went ahead and unplugged my headset, so now I can't hear a thing. No more side echo. So, okay, blacksmithing. instead of saying blacksmithing 101, we'll have a blacksmithing 001 here tonight. Because a lot of times people picture a blacksmith as, you know, being this big, heavy-duty, burly guy who's got muscles the size of most people's thigh. in his arms, and you know, just magically grabbing a chunk of red hot iron out of a fire and just effortlessly making whatever he wants to make. And yes, I suppose you can have that picture, but really, what I was told by one gentleman one time is that the size of the blacksmith doesn't make a difference. It doesn't make a whole lot of difference. Yes, if you're going to be beating out, you know, chunks of iron that are, you know, 6 inches in diameter, yeah, then you need a pretty big person to do it. But the majority of things that are done is smaller. So your biggest and strongest muscle has to be between your ears. Your brain has to be your strongest muscle to plan and carry out something. And let's see, took a peek here, chat room. I see Punkin had a question that you don't know what a blacksmith can make. Well, darn near anything that's made out of metal, actually, when you come right down to it. And that gives me a good, you've given me a good starting point here, Punkin. Back, what, in the Middle Ages, for example, the blacksmith was basically what would be a modern equivalent. A blacksmith was the local civil engineer, or the local mechanical engineer, because they were the ones that made the everyday tools for people. And there were places where blacksmiths were looked upon as being almost dangerous people, believe it or not, because for someone who could, you know, go into this shed or a shack and have a fire going, and all of a sudden, you know, half hour later, 2 hours later, however long the job took, he'd bring out a finished metal product. And people were thinking, hey, this man's messing with fire, we're smelling sulfur, there's smoke, and there's all these strange noises. And they were thinking, this blacksmith, they must be, you know, they're allied with evil, with the devil. And smithing in some areas, actually, you had the crazies then, just like you do now, where, you know, if they don't understand it, they want to ban it, you know. And people were figuring blacksmiths were, you know, workers with the devil. And let's see here. Ah, okay, I see. Yes, you commented here that that you always equated blacksmiths with horseshoes. Well, a blacksmith is more of a general metal worker. You have a subset of blacksmiths that are known as farriers, and they actually dealt with horses and other animals that need to be have shoes put on, horseshoes. Or, you know, oxen also, sometimes they would also make shoes for them. And the farriers, they not only needed to know about blacksmithing, about heating and shaping metal to make the horseshoes, but they also had to know a little bit more about animals. And so in a way, they were almost like the vets, the veterinarians of their day, or the specialists. And obviously, the average farmer and whatnot, they needed to know a lot more then about keeping their animals alive, because there weren't trained specialists, you know, for animal illnesses or disease or anything else. And so the farrier was the then current equivalent of a veterinarian, but he also, you know, would fit shoes to horses or, like I said, oxen. And let's see, what else? Like I said, the farrier is a subset of the blacksmith profession, or the trade, or the art. And not all blacksmiths are men. You know, there are lady smiths these days as well. So it's, yeah, you don't have to think that it's just guys who are doing this stuff. You know, you gals can work on it too. There's, in my area, I've attended quite a few Society for Creative Anachronism events, and the also known as the SCA. It's shorter and easier to say. And the SCA has been called the Do-It-Yourself Ren Fair, or it's also been called the world's longest floating theme party. And so there's been blacksmithing was one of the things that has come up in the SCA. And the reason I've mentioned that is because in my area, which is up here in the Kingdom of North Shield, which is basically the upper Midwest, Illinois, Wisconsin, upper Michigan, Minnesota, and Iowa, and also it verges out into North and South Dakota as well. And we have quite a number of ladysmiths who also are in the circuit for this. And up in Marshfield, Wisconsin, there's a lady up there who, she does quite well as a smith. And I'll tell you what, she's kind of the, boy, now I'm going to get myself in trouble here. She appears, I'll put it that way, to be the proverbial 98-pound weakling. You know, Mary is probably, I would say probably about 98 pounds. She stands probably about 5'2", 5'3". Very, very fine boned. And, I'll tell you what, the last couple of years when I've, you know, gone to events, she's usually there with her whole setup. And she's, by the way, she's an unusual one, because she forges in robes or in garb. She doesn't wear jeans or linen pants with a apron or what we call them, chaps on. She actually wears a ground length gown. It's brown canvas that she wears when she's doing smithing, but it's a full gown, and she does wear a leather apron too, which is wise. But so she's out there with her hair pulled back in a bun, with a cap on, and she goes for it. And there's another lady who's from up around Minneapolis, and believe it or not, her name is Mary as well. But she works more on the, the rendezvous circuit. And actually, we'd given her a nickname one time, which is Dances with Mice. Believe it or not, because she's in there. She's usually in there right with us guys, you know, helping forge metal, and she does a good job. Matter of fact, by the way, the second Mary, or Dances with Mice, believe it or not, she used to be an airborne troop, airborne range type. But she's still afraid of mice. You know, contradiction is in people, but it works. So, let's see here. Check back here at chat room here. Minnie, you asked about if she treated the fabric with fire retardant. Not really. You know, it's just good close woven canvas. And it's just it works. Your biggest thing you have to do is you have to be aware of where you're at and what's going on around you. And like I said, also Mary up there, Mary number one, when she's wearing, you know, the long, like I said, you know, almost ground length dress, she also wears a leather apron, which is wise. You know, it's, you don't want to take chances. You know, burning charcoal is good, burning clothing, not good. So, and let's see. Also, Minnie, you asked about, are there portable forges? Yes. Yes, there are. And I'm going to try something here. Okay, let me do this. What I'm doing is trying to switch over to, on my computer here, obviously. See if we can get a picture pulled up here. Okay. What I'm doing here is actually going to see if I can pull up. Okay, we will back this up. And we're going to copy a link here. And let's give this a shot, see if we can do this here. We'll paste that in there. And I'm not sure if this is going to work directly to be able to, if it'll show it or not. You guys might have to click on the link. I have a link from groups.yahoo.com and whatnot. And if you click that link, that should pull up the base for a portable forge. I don't know. Okay, did anyone try pulling that up or not? I don't know. But that's a photo of part of a forge. That's the pan or the base for a forge. And that's actually a portable one. Let's see if we can find another one here. I know I've got some more. So now if this. Okay, we'll copy that link. What I need to do is, like I said earlier, before we officially got started, I was looking for all my links earlier today I'd saved. That's what I was afraid of happening. Okay. Probably won't allow in there. My apologies. So let's see what we can do. What else? Well, actually, looking at the time here, it's 20 past the hour already. So I should probably take a few seconds here and, you know, they always want us to do a little bit of a, you know, a station break every so often. So what we'll do here is, let me do this. I'm going to go ahead here and, I'll drop one of their ads in here and a piece of music, and while that's happening, or while that's playing, I will go ahead here and look up. I know I have in another location, I do have some more photos of different forges. So we'll put a piece of music on here, and an ad, and then once these get through playing, then I'll be right back. So, see you in, let's see here, about 4.5 minutes, I guess.
That's what I like to see, bullseyes, every time. And you can do the same thing with Buyer's Barrels. As long as you do your part, the custom barrels that you get from Buyer's Barrels will deliver award-winning accuracy shot after shot. Buyer's Barrel specializes in standard and 1-in-9-inch twist match-grade 22 long rifle barrels for the Ruger 10/22 and AR-15. If you want to win, visit their site at buyersbarrels.com. That's BEYER barrels.com. Or you can call Clint at 360-374-9476 and tell him you heard it on the Shooting Bench, would you? Let him know that his advertising money is doing him some good.
Thank you. Ever since the days of old, men would search for wealth untold. They dig for silver and for gold, and leave the empty holes. And way down south in the Everglades, where the black water rolls and the sawgrass waves, the eagles fly and the otters play in the land of the Seminoles. So blow, blow, Seminole wind, blow like you're never gonna blow again. I'm calling to you like a long-lost friend, but I know who you are. And blow, blow from the Okeechobee all the way up to Micanopy. Blow across the home of the Seminoles, the alligators and the gar. Progress came and took its toll, and in the name of flood control, they made their plans and they drained the land. Now the glades are going dry. And the last time I walked in the swamp, I sat up on a cypress stump. I listened close and I heard the ghost of Osceola cry.
Go ahead and kill the microphones, or the speakers here again. Okay, yes. Little John Anderson's always good. And, like I said before, I do apologize for the pictures not coming through. I was hoping that those particular links would work, but they won't. So what I'm going to have to do is do like I originally intended on doing, is I'm going to actually have to, out on my website, I'm going to have to basically go through each time here and load up photos ahead of time. But to give you a small taste of what things should look at. Now, hopefully this one will work. This is another person who is, let's see, I'm not even sure where he's at, but this is a home-built portable forge that he has. And this one actually will work for both charcoal or coal. Photos in here, he's using coal in this photo, but they both work. And let's see, I believe, yes, on this particular one, he actually uses an air blower. So, give you kind of a chance to kind of peek at it. But I'll go ahead here and now to give you some basics. So like I said earlier, this is where it kind of gets a little difficult to try and give basics, but we can do it. Let's see. Simplest things that one needs to do any blacksmithing. You need a hammer. and some sort of source of fire and the metal to work with. I know. That's about as simple as you can get. But believe it or not, the first blacksmiths, probably what they worked with until they got going, they had the start, the very first blacksmith out there, or the first, the first blacksmith, we'll go to that point. They probably actually used, believe it or not, a chunk of rock that was held in a split piece of wood, something probably about, 12, 18 inches long, where they'd split the end, they'd bind a rock in the end. And if they would heat the metal up enough in a fire, they would get it out onto another flat rock and try, beating it into shape. And that's, of course, that's way, way more basic than what we'd be doing today. But it's, that's probably the very earliest hammer that there was. One chunk of rock smashing something else onto another chunk of rock. And there are still today some processes in advanced blacksmithing where they do actually use a block of marble or granite. That's for really lightweight stuff, but it still is used in some places. To get started in blacksmithing, though, a person could actually get away with, believe it or not, a nail hammer. I know it sounds strange, but it's true. For an anvil, a lot of people, still to this day, that are doing smithing, even on a demonstration circuit, they use a chunk of railroad rail. A lot of times, if you see rail workers, replacing chunks of track, sometimes it's actually possible to sweet talk them into a piece of rail. Because when they're replacing rails, there's a lot of times where they have to cut off a section that might be anywhere from, 12 inches to 4 foot. And like I said, if a person can do it, you can kind of sweet talk them and they're in a good mood that day, you can sometimes get a chunk out of them, which can be used for an anvil. So, we got two parts there already. We've got, something to use as an anvil, a chunk of railroad tie, or, or one could use a real anvil. And they're not cheap these days. A used anvil at auctions, whatnot, they're usually running probably, if you can find one, about $2. It usually works out to about $2 to $2.50 a pound. So, of course, if you're getting a 50-pound anvil, you're looking at maybe, spending $100, $125 for, 75-pounder, $100.50 to $200. So it can get expensive, but believe me, an anvil is well worth it. Oh, let's see here. Okay, I'm gonna peek here again into the chat room. Punkin, you said, do smiths work with other metals besides iron? Yes, they do. And it says, and you also ask, I should ask if an iron blacksmith can work with copper, silver, etc. Yeah, they can. Generally, you'll have, let's see here, how best to put it. The term blacksmith comes from a man who worked, or a woman, of course, historically, blacksmiths were men. Yeah, sorry, ladies. But the past, it used to be pretty much patriarchal, shall we say. Didn't give you ladies the chance to get into the fun as well. But yes, there were blacksmiths. They were the people who worked with the black metal. You had tinsmiths, you know, people who worked with tin. You had silversmiths, goldsmiths, you know. So and then you had redsmiths. You had blacksmiths and redsmiths. They were probably the first two. The redsmiths were those that worked with brass and copper. Yeah, whereas the blacksmiths, they worked more with the irons. And let's see, where do we go from there? Charcoal. Oh, yes, Minnie asked me here. Do you wear by the leather apron or leather to make an apron? Tandy leather? Maybe? A person can get leather at them? Okay. And there's a lot of tinsmiths out there, I see. Yes, so there's a lot of people working with tin foil these days. Sorry. Couldn't resist answering that one. But yeah, leather is, probably have to look in the, if you want to buy bulk leather, you probably would have to find a leather shop. Let's see, I'm trying to think here. Minnie, you're what, trying to remember, you're down in Texas way, right? Yeah. Here's a thought. Again, this is, we're getting, kind of really getting into the real basics of things. Leather for the aprons or chaps. If a person really wants to get primitive on stuff, one could always get, a hide from, a butcher shop or a slaughterhouse. And, of course, that's getting into a whole new ball of wax of, making one's own rawhide. We'll probably go through that some night too if I manage to get my act together well enough. But, yeah, leather is available. I know up around here, being such that I'm up here in central Wisconsin, there's a lot of deer hunting up here. And so there's a lot of places that do leather working. There's a lot of places that used to make a lot of moccasins, gloves, and such. So you might be able to look for places that have leather there as well. So it's, leather is available. You just have to kind of dig around to find it. Let's see here. I'm trying to think of other possibilities. Well, yeah. Here's one for you that I actually had an apron for a while that my wife had come up with for me. She said, "Oh, you got to wear an apron when you're working on metal." And she'd gone to a thrift shop and she found a couple of old leather jackets that were really pathetic shape. We're talking really bad. I mean, a leather jacket where the seams are splitting on. She bought that. And after she got it home, she disassembled it. And once she got it disassembled, she went, okay, well, let's see here. We can take the back here from the jacket, you know, take from the shoulder seams going across. Cut down the sides in the back. She had a, you know, fairly good sized piece of sewn together leather already. And, the two sides of the jacket from underneath the arm, under the armholes forward that she cut off. You know, obviously she did some more trimming on that. And, she borrowed me, I have my own leather sewing machine. So it's a industrial upholstery machine that I use to sew leather. And she actually grabbed that and, took that and sewed it together and basically took the back of the jacket, the sides wrapping around to the front from under the armholes, sewed it all together, and then just basically cut me an apron out. Minnie commented about, or a long leather skirt. I'm not sure how many long leather skirts are around, but, something like that would work. And pumpkin. You had another good source there. You know, salvaging leather from an old sofa. Again, you know, the stuff is around. You know, actually, believe it or not, I think we're making progress here, you know, because, like I said, tonight we're kind of doing a blacksmithing 001, you know, which is, where do we find this stuff? How do we get together this stuff to do it? Okay, here's another thing, too. Yeah, you were talking before about, where do we start? And this one you're going to shake your head at. Weber Grill. Yes. Believe it or not, a Weber Grill can be recycled and made into a very basic temporary forge. Because what a forge is, by definition, is something that you can light a fire in and pump air through the bottom of the fire and lay some metal on top to where it can heat up. One of my friends has also built, believe it or not, a forge out of 2x6s. You know, good old, pine 2x6s. And, again, it sounds crazy, but it does work. And the way he has built his, he made it about 2 foot wide by about 2.5 foot long. You know, roughly wheelbarrow shaped. You know, as a box. And what he did with that box, square frame, 2x6s on edge. And then he took a piece of plywood and nailed it on the bottom. So basically what you'd have would be something that would look almost like a shoebox, only bigger. You know, or a drawer from like a dresser. From there, what he did was he took, what was it he used? Pretty sure he mostly used just black iron pipe. He had, a piece of, I think it was 1.5 inches, just black iron pipe. Reason I specify black iron pipe is rather than galvanized pipe. Because galvanizing has some nasty drawbacks. And I'll get back to that in just a couple of minutes here, but I'm just going to go talk quick here just to kind of lock the image together in your minds about a wood forge. What he did was, once he had his, piece of pipe that was, again, like I said, probably about 18 inches long, he took and drilled a hole in the side of the box, a little bit larger than the size of the pipe. And then he took the pipe and, fed it through the hole, basically propped it up with a little, piece of wood or something. He didn't even say what he'd use, but he had like a little slight incline with this pipe that was sticking through into the wooden box. And that was left to where, in the middle of the box, the pipe was like halfway up, like vertically centered. And then he actually took mud and packed it inside this wooden box. Good old dirt from the ground. And around the pipe in the middle, where the pipe ended up in the middle of the box, he basically had it cupped out, you know, at the pipe height with the mud, and he basically has what's referred to as a crow's nest, or a nest, in the mud. It's basically in the kitchen you got your small, stainless steel bowls. You know, the ones that are probably about a 3 or 4 cup size. You know, about that same shape. That'd be your nest in a forge. And once the dry mud, or once the mud's put into your box forge, you basically have the pipe entering into the area where it's just barely into the opening. And what you have to do at that point is let the mud dry. And so while we're letting our imaginary mud dry here, now I'm going to go back and tell you about the difference between galvanized pipe and black iron pipe. Black iron pipe is just that. It's iron pipe. Nothing else added to it. Whereas galvanized pipe is coated with either zinc or cadmium, and, you know, which just kind of gives it the silver color and protects it from rusting. Here's the thing. That zinc or cadmium, if a person gets that stuff too hot and burns it, you don't want to breathe the smoke from that. There was a gentleman several years ago by the name of Pawpaw Wilson, who was kind of one of the quote unquote legends in the blacksmithing world. And what I should probably do is I should probably find his goodbye letter. Yes, and yeah, it was his goodbye letter. Pawpaw Wilson used to teach classes, basically intermediate and journeyman classes in blacksmithing. He also taught basic classes as well. But back in 2005, he made a mistake one day in his forge. His real name was Jim, but he was helping some people, you know, build some portable forges that they could take home from, you know, the classes. And unfortunately, they ran out of their black iron fittings, couplings. And all they had in the shop there were, somebody miscounted or something, but they ended up with the wrong number of black iron couplings. And they had some zinc-coated ones there. And they went, oh, well, this is dangerous, but we should be able to do it. And so he threw the pieces into a forge fire. And he had everybody, you know, leave the area. He turned the ventilator fans on and fired the stuff off. And he figured, well, you know, I know what I'm doing. I've been doing this stuff for a lot of years. And, I know enough to be careful. I won't breathe any of the smoke. Well, Pawpaw messed up. And he ended up dying in May from metal fume fever. It's metal fume fever, not a good thing. So, a bit of advice, you know, with working with forging, if you ever run across any metal that's plated with something else, don't get it in a forge. Now that I went through and gave everybody a real downer, I'll just go ahead here and kind of finish up talking a little bit about wooden forges. Yeah, punk, it's terrible. Yeah, it's whenever I talk about that or think about it, it's just like, it kind of, you know, yeah. Pawpaw was kind of a respected member of the community. Yeah, I never met the man, never heard any of his lectures, but I did at one time, you know, read his note, and he basically started out and said in the letter, "Hello, you're reading a note from a dead man." He was in the hospital dying at the time. Basically, by the way, what happens with the zinc when it's burned and it's, you know, basically evaporated in a fire, if it gets into a person's lungs, it creates acid in the lungs. So it's not a pretty way to go. Minnie, yes, about hot ashes into a galvanized bucket. Hot ashes probably wouldn't be too dangerous. Just don't leave them in the house. You know, if you're taking you know, ashes from a, like from a wood stove or a wood burner, you know, generally speaking, if a person's cleaning ashes out of a wood stove or a wood burner, the fire's pretty well out. You might have a few sparks or, you know, glimmers of coals in there. That's not enough to worry about. That shouldn't. Operative word, shouldn't. It shouldn't be any problems. You know, it shouldn't be any problem. You know, because that thickness of the galvanizing that's going to be on a bucket, it is, you know, what? It's probably at least a 16th of an inch thicker. And, you know, the sparks that are in ashes, you know, when they hit that, you know, it's a lot bigger cold sink, you know, that would put the coal out. So, yeah. I would say probably, you know, probably 9,999 times out of 10,000, you'd be perfectly safe in doing it. There's no way you're gonna ever get me to say it's perfectly safe. No, you never gotta worry about it. Because about the time someone says, "No, you never gotta worry about it," you know, that, then you'd have the 1%, one 100th of a percent of a time that, where you'd have a problem. But yes, it's safe. Yeah. As a matter of fact, I would say you would probably be better off using a galvanized bucket to put ashes in rather than just a bent up cheapy steel one. Because the bent up cheapy steel buckets, they're gonna rust. And if they rust, you could end up, you know, burning through it. So yes, you have it right, Iowa. I see. It's high temperatures. High temperatures are the danger with galvanized metals because, I'm not even sure what the temperature would have to be, but it's probably what, 1500, 1800 degrees is where you're starting to get into the danger zone for vaporizing or burning zinc or galvanizing. And so, you know, it's pretty high temperatures. It has to be pretty concentrated. You know, the stuff that got Pawpaw was he probably had the those fittings in a gas forge. I think he was using a gas forge, but he probably had them in there half an hour or so. So it's, you know, you're having to heat up an awful lot of metal to burn that off. So it's, you know, it's yeah. No problem until the metal starts to melt. That's right. Well, yeah. Yeah. But the metal's starting to melt before you even really realize, before you can even see it. Yeah. It's better not to mix fire and galvanizing. We'll just put it that way. You know, better safe than sorry. I have to admit, I do soldering, and which is, I'll solder, galvanized metal myself. I've done a little tin smithing or white smithing or however you want to call it in the past. And, it's never advisable to breathe chemical smoke. Well, to be truthful, and I'm going to do it here right now. If Mom is listening, I don't think she is, but if she would have been listening, she would have heard me, hitting my Bic, there. But even with me doing that, smoke is never a good idea to breathe unnecessarily or for too long. Oh, it's just you ladies here. I just took a pee. Oh, gee, I could have probably put stuff a lot easier, probably could have put, I'm not going to say that. I was going to say I could have probably put things a little bit more basic, but that's being not proper of me. Because like I said, there's a lot of lady smiths out there as well. And tell you what. Oh, gee. Hour's almost up here and I only took one break. Oh, well. That's okay. Let's see here. I'll finish up a little bit here quickly. Like I said, for the wood box forge, you have, and like I said, they have used, like mud inside of it. And with that pipe that's coming through from the outside, all this person has to do is figure out a way of blowing air through that. That can be done with, believe it or not, a shop vac. Most shop vacuum cleaners, you'll have one side on there where, it has air being pulled in, and it'll have an ejection side for the air. And if a person makes some sort of, choke valve, you can blow air through that. Or you can even just turn the thing off and on, too. But once you can take like a shop valve vac hose, it can be taped to that metal pipe going up into the mud box, and you just basically get your fire lit in that cup or nest area, and when you're, when you get your fire going, you can pulse the vacuum cleaner. Obviously, a vacuum cleaner is going to have a heck of a lot of air coming through there. So you have to figure out some way of choking it off a little bit. But, it can be flicked off and on just enough to give it a little bit of a breeze through it so your charcoal or your coal burns better. Myself, I have, I used to use coal, but I switched to charcoal. Because at a couple of events I was at, we had some severe wind problems. And I decided I was going to be a good neighbor for the other people who were there. Because there were some ladies who had some mighty, mighty, mighty fine clothing that they had made. And when you get this nice, rich, yellow-green smoke off of freshly lit coal, rolling over beautiful hand-stitched clothing, it just doesn't mix. It makes it stink. So I decided that I was going to switch to charcoal at that particular event, and I've used it ever since. So, okay, let's see here. I'm trying to think if there was anything else I should touch on. Well, like I said, we basically have had kind of just like a really basic, blacksmithing 001. And this coming week here, I'm going to go ahead here and I'm going to actually be putting a little bit of a thing up on my website. And I'm going to do this here. Have to bear with me just a few seconds, because what I'm going to do here is I'm actually going to go ahead here. And, okay. I've talked about that I was going to do this in the past, and I'm going to do it here tonight. What I'm doing is I'm copying off. I've got a website, and here it goes. I'm going to plunk it here into the chat room. There we go. I don't know if you can see it or not. Yeah, it's, you know, www.arlen-tower.com and then /the library. And the index page, that'll get you to the main page for the place. And right now, you know, it's kind of a scattered mix of things. And there, on the main page, there's a link there for blacksmithing. And it's got kind of a, on the blacksmithing page itself, it's got kind of a list of things, you know, tools that one can use. And I don't have a whole lot of links in there yet. I do have a little bit about, you know, very finishes for metals and how to temper it, case hardening, all that. But yeah, it's on this page area here where I'm going to be actually putting together, how would you call it, mini lessons along with photos of things. And next week, when I, or this coming week, you know, if there's some nights in here where either Conk can't get in or Mom can't get in, then what I might do is slip on in and, you know, kind of fill up the dead air space and you know, continue on. And yes, rights, that's me. Let's see here. Yeah, that's me from a few years ago, and that was at an SCA event up in where was it? Up near Marshfield, Wisconsin. So, yeah, that's me. Like I said, that was a few years ago. You know, my beard is much longer now, and the hair is much longer. So, but yes. So anyway, like I said, what's going to happen is I'm going to be going ahead, and each week what I'm going to do now is I'm going to go ahead and put, you know, photos and drawings, and I'll actually go ahead and probably, you know, label it, you know, week one, you know, or week, you know, 001, you know, blacksmithing 001 or whatever. And I'll go ahead and have the, you know, kind of the subject, and I'll literally have a page where it's going to have a lot of photos on where people will be able to, where people will be able to look at them. And then I won't be stumbling around trying to describe things. So let's see here. Gloves. With the blacksmiths here in North Shield, we have had a running religious war on gloves, for years. And, I have to admit, I'm probably myself and a gentleman who's known as Timothy the Blacksmith, whereas myself, I'm known as William the Tinker. The two of us, we're the ringleaders in trying to get a blacksmith's guild together. And Tim and I both are of the persuasion that we wear a leather glove on our left hand. Not our right hand, but just on our left. And we always make sure that the leather glove we're wearing is loose enough to where we could literally snap it off. I don't know how to describe it. Like if you start with your hand at your side, if you bring the hand up towards your shoulder and then just snap it down all of a sudden so it's straight, that's what I mean by snapping it off, where we can actually literally pop the glove right off of our hand if it gets too hot. You never, ever, ever want to wear a tight leather glove. Because what happens if you pick up a piece of metal that's almost red hot? Like I said, almost. You know, because you have, in blacksmithing, there's what's referred to as black heat on metal. It's when metal has cooled enough to where it's not glowing anymore. But it's still probably anywhere up to and including probably 1100 degrees. And something that's 1100 degrees, the heat from that's going to go through an eighth of an inch of leather, like the leather isn't even there. And so you want to have, obviously you want to have some sort of protection on your hands, but by the same token, you don't want that protection to be a vice. I don't know how else to put it. You know, protection's good, but if your protection is too protecting, you can't get out of it. So, again, like I said, you know, that's caused religious wars. We have some people there who swear up and down that, yes, you've got to wear flame retardant, heat resistant, Nomex gloves with leather over the top, and that will protect you. And there's other people who say, no, don't you ever dare wear a glove. Don't. Yeah, so, you know, like I said, Tim and I kind of run the middle of the road one-handed. So, okay, so, well, this is the first show here on GMR. I used to do college radio back, shall we say, over 40 years ago. So, yes. Anyway, tell you what, I've definitely gone over an hour here, and I'm not sure if Bobby or Cope will want to have a copy of this disaster or not. But what I'm going to do here is let me do this. I'll go ahead here, and I'm going to go ahead and run the sign off and all this stuff, and get the archives back up or the auto DJ, and then I'll probably hang around for a couple of minutes here. Yet, and so that way then we can that way I can concentrate on properly answering a question without leaving dead air showing. So let me do this. This is a piece of music my wife uses. She plays fiddle, and she plays violin in, what is it? Let's see, she's in three different quartets. She plays with a college orchestra, and she's also in two folk music bunches. And this is a particular piece of music that she plays whenever she's getting through. So I think what I'm going to do is I'll go ahead and start this tonight, and then I'll kind of get everything shut down, and then I'll come back into the chat room and for a couple of minutes more. So here we go. So have a good evening, and thank you for listening to The Tinker Shop here on JMR.